Number one, Star Wars. Number two, comics. Number three, Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit. Number four, Mario. Number five, Weird Al. Number six, Batman. Number seven, Kal-El. Number eight, The Simpsons. Number nine, TV. Number ten, every single band that I stole all their MP3s, but before they all sold out, say it all together if you're with me now. Nerds ruin everything. Nerds ruin everything. Say nerds ruin everything.
Nerds ruin everything. Hey everybody, welcome back to Nerds Ruin Everything. I'm Logan.
And I'm Adam.
And we're going to talk about Thunderbolts. We're also going to finish the conversation we started before I lost power unexpectedly last week.
Yes.
And talk about the big reveal of The Last of Us from episode two. Before we get to either one of those things, is there anything else that, like I can't think of anything that really happened this week that maybe I usually try to make notes.
There's a couple of things. Like the weirdest thing to me is Guy Ritchie is directing Roadhouse 2, which I thought was a joke, but it's not. Like
We have Guy Ritchie directing Roadhouse 2, and did we talk about the Tarantino thing at all?
No, what Tarantino thing? Remind my memory. The Cliff Booth.
The Cliff Booth thing.
Yeah, we did briefly. We talked about it. Like, it was like, okay, so Netflix paid, like, you know, an exorbitant amount of money so that Fincher could make a movie with Brad Pitt again. All not to go to theaters. We talked about it, and I think that we both agreed it was like, why are you paying all that money to not put it in theaters? Why, like, a movie that started in theaters, that was like one of the last, like one of the last great, like, Hollywood studio, like, prestige pictures, like, you know, before pandemic, and you do the sequel on Netflix, like with Fincher, I think the biggest crime of the 2020s is that we've had three Fincher pictures and none of them have been released in the theaters. Like, it's so wild, right?
It is freaking, it's crazy. And you have Sarandos out there talking about how theaters are dead. And we kind of brought this up last week, but I mean, we could talk about it again this week because it fucking happened again this week. I didn't look at the official numbers. We're recording on Sunday, so there should be a relatively good estimate. But I think they were saying like another $30 million for Sinners.
Yeah, like it only dropped about 20% is what they said. That's what the estimates are. It's still too early to tell. But also, like, it had all of its IMAX screens taken away, and it was so in demand that
they put it back.
And then all of those screens got sold out instantly, like, literally got broke, because it was all AMC that had the 70s, and they literally broke AMC with the amount of people trying to get into those 70mm IMAX screens.
Yeah.
Sarandos can say whatever he wants about theater is dead, but audiences are very much loudly, like other things that are happening in the world. People are very loud.
Revenge of the Sith last week make what, $20 million in the U.S.?
At the end of the day, it made $34 million.
Okay, there you go.
For its 1 week run. $34 million for its one week run.
It's not the theater model that's dead.
No.
You just have to give people a reason to be there.
Give them good movies. Like, and that's the thing, is like, Sarandos, like, the reason why he's saying that is the same reason why Bezos says it, is because they make shitty movies.
Yeah, and they don't have a strong arm or a hold into that business. Is it a problem? Theaters have been a problem for a while. And I will out myself and say, like, when places started closing during the pandemic and people were freaking out, I was of the mindset that, like, people will always want to go to the movies to see something, but the problem is the experience, and it's become such shit. And we talked about this last week. Like, you have to do something to improve that experience. And if losing their businesses forces them to revamp and, like, create a good experience, then fine, that's what needs to happen. But,
well, yeah,
you know, or it's not going to just go away. The massive multiplex 14 screen thing might go away, but I don't think you're ever going to truly kill the theater model.
No, like, you're not. But also, like, you know, I think that it's about time that we like, do you remember that Draft House and AMC used to have 25 and over screenings? I think it's about time to put that back. Like, 25 and over, I will spend an extra $5. I will. Like, right now, it's $35. Like, it's $30 to see an IMAX movie. $30 to see an IMAX movie in my hood. Like, I would pay $35 if it meant that I checked in my phone. And
it's going to sound like an old man. Honestly, at this point, it might be 30 and over screens.
Yeah, seriously.
Because some of these people just, like, well, like, under 30 yet. Like,
Yeah, but check in your phone. Like, that's the thing that I would do is, like, okay, so, like, if you don't want the $5 service charge, or, like, you don't want to spend $50, then guess what? You're turning in your phone for the time frame. And they'll give you a beeper, but guess what? You have to leave. Like, you hear that beep, like, you know, it's almost like a, whatchamacallit? It's like a Chili's, like a Chili, like, tag thing where it beeps you every time you get a phone call or something, and you have to go outside. And you cannot go back inside unless you check your phone in.
Yeah.
And, like, you know what? That would be fine by me because, like, you know, seriously, like, checking your phone is like, you know what? I want to smack you. Like, leave it alone. Like, there's nothing, like, I guess I'm from a different era where it's like 2 hours. There's nothing that's going to end in 2 hours.
I, you know, it's what did happen almost a week ago today. And I wasn't even thinking about it. Cause we talked about it last week. I saw Hamilton.
Oh, yes.
And this will tie into what we're currently talking about. So it was great. Like, I want to watch the
version now.
The movie version, filmed, just for comparison. Yeah.
Yeah.
I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I enjoyed it way more than I really thought I would. And I was so glad we got to go. The production we saw, like, Chattanooga's not a small city, but they don't get, like, this was the first truly, like, big, like, touring Broadway thing that has come here, and they're really amping it up. Like, Clue is coming in November, Kinky Boots is coming, Mrs. Doubtfire is coming next year, The Wiz is coming next year. Like, they're really trying to, like, pull in some of that, and, like, that's exciting because before it was like, well, I can drive to Atlanta to the Fox Theater in Atlanta and see that stuff. But, you know, it's a drive and all that. But anyway, so saw it. It's fantastic. There was a couple of seats over from us. A guy had brought his whole family.
Mm-hmm.
His daughter and his daughter's boyfriend were sitting a few seats over from us. She would not stop talking the entire play.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
And, like, I felt bad for her boyfriend because, like, it wasn't like she was talking about what was going on, which is still bad. But, like, he's sitting here and she just, like, talking about her shoes and her dress. And, like, it was so vapid. Oh. And I don't know. It was really irritating. Not enough to completely ruin it, but there were parts where she was extremely loud, and I was like, how is someone not come and told her, like, you have to stop talking. But, yeah, it's like that kind of thing.
Yeah. It's the obliviousness.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm like, my mom would have reached two seats over and been like, if you do not shut up, we're leaving. Mm-hmm. And we're like, I'm probably going to get popped. Like, I'm not advocating for child abuse, but like, you're disturbing literally everyone around you. And I even told Steph, I was like there were two people and for two younger people in front of us too. And they were talking. They were talking about what was going on in the play, and they were whispering to each other very much like, it's not even inside voice. It was leaning into, cupping your hands, whispering to somebody. Like, I could see them doing it, couldn't hear anything they were saying. Meanwhile, this girl two seats next to me, I'm just like, I can hear everything she's saying to her boyfriend. And
like, that's just
but the best part was, you'll love this. I didn't get to hear it. I had to use the restroom at at the intermission. And I came back and Steph was like, you're not going to believe this. But there was a whole conversation with these people. And the dad said, you know, I didn't know Alexander Hamilton was black.
Oh, my God. Oh, good Lord. Oh, man.
Yes. This man in the 1700s who was being, like, possibly groomed and are thought of to be a candidate for the presidency was black.
Yeah. No.
That's what you think. And you're missing the entire point of what's going on in the play. Like, yeah. Guess who else wasn't black, man? George Washington?
Washington? Yeah.
Lafayette wasn't black?
No, not at all. Oh, Jesus Christ.
Thomas Jefferson? Also not black?
Oh, good Lord. Like, we really do live in idiocracy, don't we?
We really do. Crazy, man. Like, I saw an account the other day, not to get too, but this lady going off about how they were teaching her children Arabic numerals in school, and if they didn't know them, they couldn't graduate or something. And I was like, that's what we use.
Yeah.
Like, this is indoctrination. And I'm like, oh my God, I fucking hate it.
Oh my God. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if she says, if they don't learn Roman numerals, they're not learning anything. It's like, Roman numerals, like, are okay. But anyhow, you just live in a stupid ass society. Like, we really do live in a fucking idiotic society. Going back to, like, the weirdness of, like, this whole, like, Guy Ritchie, like, and there's also another reason I'm talking about the Guy Ritchie thing, which is that Guy Ritchie has made movies consistently that have been released in theaters. And this is his first one that's not going to be, like, the whole reason why Doug Liman made a big stink was because he was guaranteed.
Yeah.
A theatrical run. And Bozos decided that he didn't want to do that. I mention this because Guy Ritchie knows what he's doing. He knows that he's going to have to, like, I guarantee you it's going to be set in the UK. It's going to be, like, his thing, because that's probably what him and Gyllenhaal, who's the producer, guarantee. But it's going to be on, it's going to be a streaming TV movie, right? I mention this because right now the big rumor around Hollywood is that Bozos, and I'm not going to call him Bezos, I'm going to call him Bozos because, you know, fucking idiot is trying to throw the Godfather, like, I'll make you an offer you can't refuse, to Christopher Nolan to direct the next
James Bond movie, right?
Yeah. I'm going to say this. If Chris Nolan agrees to this, he's a fucking moron. Because I guarantee you, Bezos is going to be a true Bond villain. He'll guarantee him everything. He'll give him $350 million, and guess what he's going to do? He's going to bait and switch him. He will. He will get a one-week window, maybe if he's lucky, and then the rest of it, then it's going to go on to streaming. Like, that's what's going to happen. So if Chris Nolan and Emma Thompson decide to be idiots, because I already guarantee you he's going to say no, because Bezos has already been on record for basically fucking over the Broccolis. And the Broccolis are basically British, are British like royalty. And if you know anything about Chris Nolan, he's very much so about like the history of Hollywood and the history of UK cinema. And you fucking them over, yeah, you know what? He'll take your meeting just because he has to, but it ain't happening. I'm pretty sure it's not going to happen. But I just find it wild that Guy Ritchie, who has done streaming service stuff, but it's always TV series, right? He has two CBS yeah. TV series right now, that Mobland one and then The Gentleman.
And is Mobland the one that's like, no, that's something else that took, that was a movie. It wasn't Guy Ritchie. Somebody has a movie out that like has Abbott. Been, yeah.
It's Gareth Evans who.
That's right, Gareth Evans. Yeah.
Yeah, the Raid and the Raid Part 2. And like the wildest thing is that it's been 8 years since he's made a movie, and this movie is on Netflix. Like, it's a shame. I've seen it. It's good-ish.
But had it been sitting on a shelf for like 2-3 years?
It wasn't sitting on the shelf. He could not complete it because he, like other people, like first it was like there was pandemic stuff that happened, and then contracts, like, and then he had a major amount of reshooting to do because he built it in. He was like 30% of filming needed to be redone because there was some problems and stuff in editing and stuff. Like he has done that with both of his movies where he does two shoots. He does like a, like, I mean, he's kind of like a Pixar in that regard, right? Like, you know, like we, or Marvel, where they build in a, like, you know, we're going to be talking about a Marvel movie that they had built in reshoots, not even reshoots, additional photography. And I can guarantee you, like, I already know, like the story had completely changed on Thunderbolts. Like, I'm fairly certain that a lot of it had changed. And the reason why it changed was they figured out that the original story wasn't working. So anywho, but then the actor strike happened, the writer strike happened, and all the strikes happened, and he couldn't get back until literally last year in June. And so he's literally been working on completing it, which sucks. Think about that. He finished his first shoot in 2022, like at the end of 2022. And then going into 2023, a COVID thing hit UK pretty hard. So they had to lock down. And then after that, in the summer, the writer's strike happened. And then after that was the actor strike. Or no, it was the actor strike, then the writer strike. And so he literally couldn't do anything. It's a decent movie. Like, if he had made this, like, if it had gotten released like 3 years after Raid 2, you'd have been like, okay, it's his first Hollywood movie. It just seems like it seems like a wait. Like, when you watch it, you're like, this is what happens when somebody who makes a movie in Hong Kong or in Asia who makes like two wildly great action movies come to the US, and this is what happens. They get cut off at the knees. Like, it's just not that good. It's not that it's not good. It's just that it's not great, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it has a great cast though. Like Timothy Olyphant as a bad guy, he's pretty great. Like, he's got the whole, like, you know, he's got all the swagger. Tom Hardy is Tom Hardy. You know, he's Mumbles McCoy like through the whole entire film. But it's just one of those movies where it's just like, man, if it was on in the theaters, you probably would have given it a little bump. Because it was in theaters, but it's not. Yeah. It's on Netflix. And you're just like, So, yeah. But, like, that's my worry about Guy Ritchie, is that Guy Ritchie makes movies for the theater. And he's now officially in streaming. And it's not even like I said, like he has TV series. Like, why are you going to the, is it that dried up?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, he's supposed to make, like, I mean, like the funniest part about this is that he's making this after supposedly he makes like Disney, I don't know why, but Disney really wants to make his Aladdin 2. He has a take. And everybody wants him to come back. I mean, he's making this after Aladdin 2.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, the other one, like, the thing that disappoints me, though, is a man who's, like, whose name I enjoy more than a lot of his movies, Luca Guadagnino. His Sergeant Rock just got, now it's not clear, he got canceled or delayed.
It's not clear which one. I think that delayed is probably a more accurate term. Like, I'm sure you know, but, like, the whole story there is they were trying to get it together really, really quick because they needed to shoot, like, summer, early fall because of where they were shooting and the weather situation. Some pieces fell apart, and so they couldn't get it together. So now it's rather than, like, either A, find a new place to shoot, was it Daniel Craig that was circling?
Colin Farrell.
That's right.
He dropped. Daniel Craig dropped. Nobody knows why, but he dropped. Colin Farrell was like instantly. I was like, I'll do the Sergeant Rock. Which, to be perfectly honest, I would
rather see Colin Farrell's.
Yep, I'd much rather see Colin Farrell's.
I think Daniel Craig has the look. But, like, Colin Farrell's proven that he can act under extensive makeup. So even if you have to do a little bit, I think you're okay there. But I think Farrell makes far more interesting acting choices than Daniel Craig does.
Oh, 100%.
So, 100%. Unless Colin Farrell's just not doing anything when they circle back around to it, then he might be out. They might be looking for a new lead. I don't know. Just kind of depends. He seems to have a good relationship with the studio. So, we'll see how that goes. I hope it's just a delay. Now, that said, if Superman does not make bank, this movie ain't happening, man.
No, because from what I understand, this movie is very expensive because it's shot on long, like, Guadagnino's
all location stuff.
All location,
right?
It's literally all location. He wants to do a World War II. The pitch was, if he was going to make a PG-13 war movie, that he wanted to film everything on location. So it's literally like French Alps, or Swiss Alps, Italian Vatican, Italy, Germany. Like, it's all over the world. It's, like, all over Europe. And it's a very expensive film. And that's why they wanted Daniel Craig at first. And then, like, it almost fell apart the first time. And then he found Colin Farrell.
Is he shooting or has already shot? Like, he's going to shoot his remake. Because he's the one remaking what's the name of the movie? The Patrick Bateman.
He is not, because it fell apart. Because his initial star, Austin Butler, dropped out.
Oh, okay. So I hadn't read that.
So the rumor is that he dropped out because Michael Mann at any moment is going to get a green light on Heat 2. Where he's gonna play the Val Kilmer role, and if anybody has seen Austin Butler, you know he's a double.
He does look like a young Val Kilmer. It's wild.
And I mean, and if you're in Michael Mann, what is probably going to be one of Michael Mann's last movies, and it's a sequel to one of his most iconic movies, you kind of circle and wait for that, right? Yeah. Like, at least to me, like, I don't want to play Patrick.
You're talking about remaking a beloved,
horror movie,
counterculture horror kind of thing that people will probably not embrace versus making a sequel to like a beloved action heist film, like with one of the great directors. With, I mean, he's Michael Mann's somebody that like can get almost anybody on for anything, you know?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And he's getting the budget that he wants, which is stat, and it's going to be, again, another movie. Like, I love that studios are starting to be smarter about these things, and supposedly it's going to be filmed all on location. If you've read the book takes place in the shipping lane, like, in South America and in Asia and across all of the shipping lanes of the Pacific Ocean towards the equator. So it's to say that it's going to be a big epic movie is an understatement. I mean, like there are like action scenes, like when he wrote it, like I will say this much, like I enjoyed the hell out of reading that book, but I also kept on going, this is the movie that he want. Like there's two stories.
Well, that was the kind of the thing, right? Like he he didn't think he would get to make the movie or had this idea. And like now everybody's almost, I mean, everybody has aged out of those parts. And unfortunately, like one of his stars has passed away. And so you can't, so he just wrote it as a book. And now it's just like, oh, well, we want to make the movie. We'll just recast the parts.
And you know, luckily, luckily the one that he's telling, the one set right after the events when Pacino kills the De Niro character, it's all Val Kilmer until the last, like, maybe 50 pages. And I won't ruin what happens, but, like, it's Val Kilmer and a new set of people, like, or the Val Kilmer character and the new set of people, because he goes on the run. But then he has this wildly epic adventure where he goes into like the Chinese triad and mafia and like, and also like the Colombian drug dealers. And it's like a fucking wild ass adventure. Like it is a huge movie. He starts off as a bodyguard.
I think I got that book for Spencer for his birthday last year. I was like, oh, hey, this is happening. If I didn't, then we talked about it. So,
But yeah, needless to say, like there are people that are making big movies right now with the studio. And I love hearing those moves. Like the studios are, it's kind of like the way, like, I know it sounds weird, but I was reading, I've been reading some historical fiction, like, and I always do film stuff, right? Just because everything else is like, oh, Jesus Christ. But I'm doing this one that's set in the 50s right now, and it's very much similar to what we're dealing with right now, because it's TV versus film and what film did to counter the idiot box, right? And a lot of it was widescreen, color, epic tales, things told in real, like in real locations. They got out of studios to make these epics. And I feel like that's what's happening with studio work right now, is that they're slowly changing over, like, oh, we have $250 million. Why don't we just go ahead and have somebody film on location?
Yeah. I mean, they're... The spectacle of special effects was a driving force for a long time.
Yep.
But the problem is, like, digital's come such a long way that, like, you can do that stuff on TV for relatively the same budget. But when you look at, like, something like Game of Thrones, which does cost a lot of money, but, like, you watch that and it's like, why does this look better than fucking Ant-Man and the Wasp, Quantumania? Like, why am I paying, like, you know? And yeah, I did enjoy that movie for what it was, but like, it does look like empty, you know?
It looks like a $1.95 on the volume,
you know? Like, when you're watching The Mandalorian and you're like, that is partially, mostly filmed on the volume, but it still looks better because you're seeing it on a TV screen, not a big screen. It looks better. And you're like, why am I paying to go see shit that looks less? So, like you're talking about, you have to pivot into something else. And like, it's weird that the pivot might be going back to what they were originally. Like that's why when you look at like movies from like the 60s into the 70s, you had these giant, massive, like star-studded epic things that were like, come see this, and like Cinescope, and with all these
big stars
and big stories.
Yeah. And I mean, I mean, we're getting one this summer. Like, okay, so like I went to go see what we're talking about again on the big screen. I went to go see Thunderbolts for a second time. And we were relatively close because I like to be close to the screen, right? And the F1 trailer, the newest F1 trailer that has the chain on it, the Fleetwood Mac song. Yep. Watching that on the big screen,
it might be the surprise hit of the. It might not do Oppenheimer numbers, but it might be like that level of like, oh shit, we did not think like. We hoped it was going to be big, but we didn't think it was going to be this because, like Top Gun, because it becomes this thing of like, you have to see this on the biggest, loudest screen possible.
Because they spent two fucking years making it in two seasons of F1 making this movie. Like, and you can feel it. Like I have a theater that like they had the volume up and it was, I'm like, I need to see, like, I have a press contact for Apple, and I instantly, like, you know, that's why I'm able to like review all of the Apple stuff in advance. They're very open about giving their stuff out and also giving press so ratings,
way more than Netflix was.
Oh God. Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we'll let you watch one episode.
Seriously. like when I asked about Bad Monkey, they're like, Bad Monkey, all the episodes, motherfucker. but when I got home, I instantly emailed them and I'm like, hey, I know it's already a month out, but I'm pretty sure that you're going to start screening this. I'd love to be at a true IMAX 70 screening of this, because I know that they have, the reason why they're releasing when they are is because they have like 3 weeks of uninterrupted IMAX. And I want to be there. I want to be at a screening on IMAX 70, because this thing looks like, I kind of am into F1. Like, I got into it because of the Netflix series, Race to Win. Like,
it's gaining like pretty big numbers. Yeah, like like the MLS is coming up. Women's basketball is coming up. Like that, they're like growing super super quick.
Absolutely. So, like. Yeah, so like it's a big thing, right? But like you watch this trailer, like they whoever made their trailers, give them a bonus, because I feel like that's what's going to be like. I know it's Warner Brothers and Apple, so I'm almost thinking that the same guys that did the Sinners trailer are probably the same guys that did this F1 trailer, and give these motherfuckers a bonus, because they're the reasons why people are going to go see these movies. I feel like this one will be like that kind of thing of like Sinners is right now, where people, like, it's a word of mouth thing. Like, it's going to be a naturally occurring thing. Even like the movie that we're going to be talking about in a few, I have an opinion that I feel like the way that people were talking about Thunderbolts, and we'll get into this later, after the screening, was genuine shock and genuine. Like, I heard three people say, we gotta tell da 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 to see this movie, because this is not your average Marvel movie.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, and we'll talk a little bit more about that. But like, needless to say, I feel like we're like, you remember how last year we were like at the end of the summer, we're like, oh man. But maybe 2025 will be the season, right?
Yeah.
I feel like you were right, but in a completely different way. I don't know if the movies that we thought were going to be big are going to be big. And I think that
I would have never pegged Sinners for like, make over $200 million.
And it's going to be a cultural event. Like, it's like, they can't deny it. Like I just read a Variety article where they were like, you know, like all the bullshit that they talked about at the beginning were like, it was like, well, you know, we're going to forget about what we said and be like and our racist asshole natures. And we're going to, because of the fact that we have to get clicks, we're going to say, yeah, this is really relevant. But, you know, still the Ryan Coogler deal could smell end for Hollywood. And I'm like,
it's so fucking stupid. So okay.
I'm like, yeah,
you saw this.
Yeah.
You saw the studio this week, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. Didn't you send me that thing, I think.
Yeah, the Kool-Aid.
I mean, the like the are we racist thing.
Yeah, just... oh my god. Little Rel said we're not racist, so we're not racist. But it's the uppercut. Like, it's in plain sight.
You're worried about whether or not you're gonna be perceived as a racist that you're doing absolutely shitty things.
Yes. And then when, like, I love you, they're like, fuck AI. And it was like, oh my God, this is so fucking great. Yeah. Like, this is so fucking great. And I just say one thing about the studio is my favorite, like, throwaway line that I really want to know about now. And I really kind of want I want them to do another project where they're some kind of like lovers or romantic thing. Was when she comes in, when Catherine Hahn comes into his office, or
yes, in, the and house, she goes, yeah,
yes, and she goes, should we make out again? And he goes,
We can't do that anymore.
And I'm like, that is a whole storyline I kind of fucking want. Yeah. And now I'm like, now I can only see Seth Rogen, Catherine Hahn, horny, thirsty, weird ass like romance.
Yeah.
The studio continues to be like the thing that I look most forward to during the week. Like, it's the instant watch, right?
It's such a home run. Like, I'm so excited. Like, those guys keep hitting home runs, man.
They do.
20 years ago, if you'd been like Rogan and his buddy Goldberg, like, they're gonna just be the top-notch producers in Hollywood. Like, they're gonna be just unbeatable. I would have been like, okay, yeah, whatever. And not like, I don't know if you've seen, but now he's got I don't know if it's something he just invested in or what, but he's got a line of, it's like THC infused like soda water stuff.
Yeah, it's actually a part of his like he has a weed lifestyle brand.
Yeah,
and it's a part of that. It's a part of that. Like, I saw that, I was like,
but like, I'm seeing like national advertisements for it. I'm like, oh, this is wild.
Yeah, it's his bureau. Like, it's literally like his bureau. It's like great. Like, he's like he's really turned around from this slacker stoner to this kind of brand of like hip. Like, who would have thought that 25 years ago when we were watching Freaks and Geeks, because like we can kind of claim that, right? Like I know I still hold like. It's like, I hate James Franco because he's a fucking piece of shit. But there's an episode of Freaks and Geeks, you know, the one, Carlos. And it's like that series is ground zero for so many people. But like, if you would have told me the stoner dude, who's like the chunky dude who doesn't say anything and just does the laugh, if you had told me, if you had told me this dude would end up being one of the hipper, like stylish filmmakers, not just an actor, but a filmmaker of the 2020s, I'd have laughed at you. I would have laughed at you because that is not who you think he is. But I mean, slow clap for him, dude. I mean, like, seriously, like, he is, he, like, it's not just like IP, but I mean, like, the studio is like a true piece of creative, like, original, like, original content that, like, I don't know, it's like, it's hitting on all cylinders. And like right off the bat after a first season, like, that's always weird to me when you can produce something that good in the first season. That tells me how good you are at something or how much you care about that particular piece of content. So yeah, like, I can't, like, week to week, it's just like, I'm always waiting to see what the next, who the next guest star is, who the next person is that's going to be on the show. You know, and this week with fucking Ice Cube and fuck AI was kind of great. You know, next week is the Golden Globes. So we're going to actually, I'm very much looking forward to this one because Zoe Kravitz is in this one, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. As bad as everything is, like, it's feeling like a really good time to, like, disassociate and, like, fall into TV's so good right now. And movies are so good right now. It's just like, well, I guess the world's just going to go to hell, or at least this country is.
Yep. Yep. No, you're absolutely right. And speaking of going to hell and where something that you can't disassociate from, I mean, unless we don't have anything else, did we want to kind of get into the first two episodes of The Last of Us?
Yeah. We can quickly, because, like, it's kind of old news, but we unfortunately didn't get to talk about it because of tech difficulties. I lost power, and like, speaking of tech difficulties, this only for Adam. The reason I couldn't hear anything is because the headphones, I'm using Steph's headphones, they have a volume knob on them.
Oh,
it was turned down. Okay, so. That's why I'm an idiot.
Okay.
So
no.
I was adjusting them and I hit the knob and I was like, oh, what did I just do? Everybody and their mother has already talked about this, but we didn't get to talk about the death of a major character. Wouldn't even really have to say spoilers now, but so, like, I never thought that they would kill him. Like, I knew it was going to happen. It's Game of Thrones level of, like, people that know are like, we're not going to talk about it.
Yeah. And,
like, you're just going to have to see what happens. But.
And I didn't know how they were going to translate it because, so, like, The problem, and they managed to do it perfectly, like, to me at least. Like, you do know how it does in the video game, right? Like, do you know how it happens in the video game?
So I've heard a couple of different, like, breakdowns on podcasts. So I kind of, because I didn't play the games, so I kind of have an idea of how it happens. Okay, I know that Tommy's there, not what's her name?
Not Ellie. Yeah. But so, okay, so it's more of like how it's done that becomes that. So, and this is where Neil Drucker, the guy who made The Last of Us Part 1 and 2, really kind of shined as a game maker, and he changed the game, which was, so you play three people, like, you play multiple people, but the main three people that you play in the game are Joel, Abby, and Ellie. And during the Joel murder, you play Abby.
I did hear that. Yeah.
Yeah. So you are forced, like, so, like, what I love about these games is that you're forced to confront moral decisions that you don't want to, like, it's all well and good. Like, I love that Drucker, when he said that he made, like, because I was there at Ground Zero. Like, I played The Last of Us Part 1, and then I played The Last of Us Part 2, and I read a lot of interviews because, like, I stopped playing the game when that happened. Like, when I had to kill Joel, well, I had to beat him to death, I stopped. I literally turned off the game and I stopped for a while, like a week or two. And then I went and I read, like, I finally started to read and listen to the Neil Drucker podcasts and, like, the interviews and reading a thing. And he was like, I very much wanted to make a game that confronted you morally, that you weren't just inactively standing by killing people. And he's like, I wanted to make sure that you understood that everybody had a point of view. And that Abby was doing, as much as you probably hated Abby and you were doing something that you didn't want to do, you had to do it to move forward because that's her point of view. And, like, you know, you don't get, like, you don't get to be unmorally, like, you don't have to, you don't get to be amoral and non-complicit in this. And I wanted to make sure that you were morally complicit in it. And, like, that's the way that the game works. And I didn't know how they were going to be able to pull it off on TV, but I feel like having Ellie there instead of Joel's brother.
Yeah, it gives it it kind of reframes some of it. It's still personal because it's personal to you, but it's not just his daughter and his brother witnessing his death. It's somebody who does love him. And, like, you kind of, you haven't seen the next episode, but you do get this, like, miniature moment of, like, people being like, we all love Joel, but we all also, like, lost somebody, which I know that the horde thing is not in the game, like, in that moment. And so adding that to create these different kind of, not stakes, but kind of, like, ramifications of, like, that way it's not everybody is mourning the loss of Joel. It's like we lost dozens and dozens of people. And so it's not just about Joel. Like, the way they did it really, really, like, benefited the show. Because, like you're talking about in the game, you reframe it because you're the one having to do it. You can't do that in the show. You can give, like, they've given us the reason she's doing it, and you can kind of feel for that, but she's not the character you've been following. So it's really hard to drop your feelings for who Joel is. But by adding all that other death, it's just like, okay, yeah, this hurts for her and for his, but even his, well, again, I won't say any more about the next episode, but it is like, okay, well, he died, but, like, all these other people died too. And that adds a different kind of level to it that wasn't in the game, but does keep you from, like, focusing, from being too, like, into, like, the revenge aspect of it.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I kind of get that, like, regardless of the next episode, because you can tell the works that they're doing, like, you know. But, and I also like that they're changing it in the, I know that there have been a lot of people that don't like it, that would rather have had it be, like, the way that it is in the original. But, I mean, it's like, then that's not TV. Like, that's not this TV series, right? Then you're just copying the video game. And the video game is still there. I mean, point back, both of them remastered for the PS5.
Yeah.
And they're, like, you know, so, like, you can go back and play them. And actually play them, like, for a, play them on the next gen consoles, so that you can have a new experience with it, and you can, like, you know, put the same storyline and play that storyline. Like, it doesn't have to be the same thing, and that's what I love about this TV series, is that it's going to probably go down as probably the greatest video game adaptation. Like, I'm convinced, because it adapted it. Like, it's doing exactly what you want in adaptation.
It's gonna have to
shit the bed.
Yeah, like, really, to just, like, be like, oh, okay, yeah, y'all lost it. Like, and I'm not even talking about, like, Game of Thrones level of, like, oh, yeah, you lost this at the end there. It would have to be fucking bad.
Really, really fucking bad. Like, because it's just, but I don't think so. Like Mazin and Druckmann, like, they really understand this. Like, it's not even Mazin. Like, Mazin is a good writer, but I feel like Druckmann is not getting enough credit for being a master storyteller. And I feel like this is showing how good of an, like, there's a part of me now that really wants, like, he's actually directing the second to last episode, like, which HBO always does, as, like, the penultimate episodes are always, like, the game-changing episodes, right? Yeah. He's getting to direct it and write it with Haley Gross. And if you know who Haley Gross is, Haley Gross co-wrote The Last of Us Part 2 with him. Like, he brought her in because he wanted a female voice. He wanted a dominant female voice for Abby and for Ellie in the game. So he brought her in on season two, or on the second game to actually write to write most of it, which I always find is great. But I really want Druckmann to take back his first baby, which is Uncharted, and redo Uncharted. Like, throw out the cast that he has and just redo Uncharted, because if this is the kind of, like, level that we're getting of adaptation, just start over. Like, it feels so cheap what they were allowed to do with Uncharted, that it almost feels like an insult, because you get The Last of Us, and The Last of Us is, like, so good, and Uncharted is so terrible. And I've played that game. Like, I love that game. That's, like, you know, that's, like, an ode to Indiana Jones that I don't think that, like, I don't think that unless you've played those games, you truly understand how good how great of an adventure game those games are. Right. And how much they recall. Like, there's a reason why, like, Harrison Ford, like, they got Harrison Ford to play Uncharted 4, and he's sitting there, and, like, they got him to play it, and he looks like he's a kid again, because it literally, like, that game, like, the game, not only just the specific game he's playing, but the game itself is that kind of fun. And I just think that Druckmann understands his stories in a way that I didn't know he did until this adaptation. Like, it's really kind of great. Like, it really is great. Like, I don't even understand. I don't know. Like, it's one of those things where I need, like, after this, I needed some time away from it. Like, you know, to, like, kind of, like, process it, because it's a lot to take.
Yeah.
That's how good it is.
I don't think it'd be a huge spoiler to tell you that the show itself, like, mm-hmm. I know we start the season with the time jump, but after two episodes, it's not a long jump, but they jump.
But it is a time. Yeah, it's a time jump. Yeah, I figured as much. Like, there's a couple of time jumps in the game that I will be surprised. Like, that will be the point where the season ends and season two begins, or season three begins. Because there's very specific time jumps in the game, and it's there's a purpose for it. So I'm expecting that, because for the most part, it's been a pretty, with the exception of a few things, like the story, the heart of the story remains the same. So, I mean, but it's great storytelling. Like, it's not just great, it's elite level storytelling, like the studio, in a completely different way. Like,
it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Like, I know The Last of Us is an expensive show, just like Game of Thrones, but you watch The Last of Us and then go see, I mean, a movie that we both mostly enjoyed, go see Captain America, that was released in February, and you're like, why can I see this level of storytelling in two episodes of Last of Us that
shot on location?
Like, it's there's an emotion to it that, and a heart to it, and like there's stuff there that just isn't in these like slapdash, like money grab things. And I know everything's a money grab, but like if it's not making, very few entertainment things are made, like a studio produces it because they want to make money off of it.
Exactly. So,
you know, but it you know, it doesn't feel piecemeal. It doesn't feel made by committee. Even if it is, there's this thing that's there. And when you can get that sitting at home in front of your television or even watching it on your fucking phone, why are you paying $25 to go to a movie theater and then another $20 on top of that to get some popcorn and a drink to just be like, well, that felt empty, you know?
Yeah.
Like, no, you want
you're
right. something to entertain and move you and like all of that. And you sometimes you go to them, or lately a lot, last few years you go to the movies and it's like, I'm getting like, I'm starving and you're like, here, have a Twinkie. Like, okay. But the Twinkie costs $30 and I'm hungry again 10 minutes later.
Yeah, but at home
it's not doing anything for me.
But at home you can have right. Kobe fit beef.
Right. Like you have free. Gourmet stuff at home that like you can access it anytime. You're not on a specific time, like it, you know, and I mean we can like pivot here right into the Thunderbolts because even though it didn't have the first opening weekend Captain America had, I think it's going to have more legs than Captain America yep. had. They did it. Like,
yeah.
I don't know where to start here.
Well, okay.
Other than like the movie's fucking great. It's top to bottom great. I will say that my one negative thing, and it like it'll probably always be that unless it's like in-game level epic, I think you could cut 10 minutes out of this movie. It's simply pieces here and there, but I think it's just a little too long. Not Sinners level where I'm like, I think you could lose 30 minutes of this movie, but maybe 10 minutes. I don't honestly don't know where. But I think it could be a little tighter. Some of the action could be a little bit tighter. And that's the only negative thing I'll say about it.
Like, I think the Wendell Pierce stuff should go. You didn't need the... drop that, it becomes a little bit more streamlined. Either that or you add 10 minutes and you give Wendell Pierce the full... Like, you give him the full amount that he needs. But then that slows everything down.
You kind of need some of that, like, to know why she's doing, like, all of this stuff. But I feel like 2 minutes of exposition explaining that versus the 10 minutes or so of screen time you give to it. Yeah, you could probably just excise that and have Bucky be like, oh, yeah, you know, this is what's going on. So
absolutely. I think, okay, so like for me, the strongest piece about Thunderbolts and the thing that I kind of like took away from it with my first viewing and then doubled down on the second viewing is that from start to finish, it is a movie anybody can see. Much like Guardians of the Galaxy, it is a film that does not require you to know the 36 film or 35 films that came before it in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It's like literally, it acts almost like a soft reboot entry point into the Marvel Universe if you've gone away from it for a while. And like the thing that I found most refreshing is that it literally tells a A, B, C story. From beginning to end, it is a story about, like, about a team, yes, but it's ultimately about this one woman that you don't have to know a lot about, but just to, like, you get everything that you need to know about her and her journey.
It feels weird to be like, this is old school MCU when the MCU isn't even 20 years old. Yes. I mean, this weekend was the 17th anniversary of Iron Man. 17 yeah. years. And it feels weird that we've gotten so much in 17 years. I mean, we have more MCU movies in 17 years than we have James Bond films in the entire existence of that fucking franchise. Exactly. Like, and more Batman movies. Like, it's fucking wild. More DC movies, period. But, yeah, like, it's that level of, like, I don't know, like, being able to ground the characters, give you all you need to know about those characters. Like, knowing all the previous stuff does help inform, and you can yes. have this more immediate attachment. But, like, there's two specific characters in this movie that, one, first of all, the Taskmaster thing fucking
wow.
floored me, man. Like, 5 minutes into the movie, you killed somebody that you were promoting as part of the movie, but you don't ever see Taskmaster in any of the other stuff. So, no. We should have known, but it still, fuck, I was like, well, Taskmaster's not dead. And then the fucking building is, like, they incinerate everything in that room. And I'm like, I can't believe they killed Taskmaster. But it was also, like, this like, nod to, like, we fucked this up, and we know yeah. we fucked this up, so we're just going to execute this character, and that'll be that.
Which is great, because it kind of, it goes back to the whole Dirty Dozen of it all.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, in like, Men on a Mission film, or People on a Mission film, like, I really like how somehow they were able to get back to... Yelena says, like, so all we do is punch and shoot, but like, there's a level of kind of humanity that they get back to. I mean, even with the most powerful of them, which is, like, you know, is Sentry Bob, like, there's a, like, a human faultiness to everything. And, like, this scrappiness, and, like, I mean, like, credit to, like,
what you what? Had in the Avengers. Like, yes. I know you have god level characters, one specifically, but part mm-hmm. of what makes it so great is, like, yeah, Cap's super strong, but he's not unkillable. You know, no. Iron Man's not unkillable. Hawkeye and Black Widow, definitely not unkillable. And I mean, little aside here, I'm with Jeremy Renner. What the fuck, guys?
Yeah, seriously. Seriously.
Like, what the seriously. Fuck?
why are you fucking him over? Like, I think it's
this is why we don't have Hawkeye season 2. Are you fucking yeah. kidding me? Pay in the immortal words of our favorite Russian. Pay yeah. the man his money.
Exactly.
but that's we don't have to get into all that. We can litigate that another time. But, like, that's why this is, like, the first movie, I think, since the first Avengers film where it's just like, oh, I really, like, am I feel in kind of, it feels weird to say inspired, but like these are flawed characters
mm-hmm.
doing, like, what they have to do to survive and becoming the heroes we know that they can be. Like, it's so cliched, but when you play the notes right, it's like, I don't know, it fucking works when, like, not to jump to the end, but when they all individually fucking save somebody. When mm-hmm. the shit is going to hell, it's fuck, it works, man. It works so good.
Well, like, okay.
And so, I was just like, this is like in Avengers, like when Cap is just like, fuck it, I'll do it myself.
Self. But no, we, right. Like the moment where a Walker, like, has the, like, you know, like, is saving that lady, and then all of them together,
yeah,
like push that piece of rock. Like, my theater erupted in applause, like, just spontaneously. Like, and it was such a weird, like it's not a weird moment, but it's a very small, like, they're just saving one person. But it's the fact that they're, like, they've built up to this moment where all of them together respectively decide, like save this one woman. It's like, it's like you said, they play the notes right, and it works. You know, it's funny because that's literally, I feel like they, I don't, like, I honestly wonder if they tripped into this or they purposely did this, because it really does feel so different than everything that we have gotten over the last 5 years.
Yeah.
Since Endgame.
Outside of, like, Guardians.
Yeah. But Guardians is different. Guardians is, yeah. James, like, the more the more I think about it, the more I feel like James Gunn was, after they gave the test of, like, okay, let's just give him Guardians, and if it fucks up, it fucks up. And it didn't, and he kept on getting better. I feel like they, like, Kevin was like, let's let James do whatever he wants to do. And by the third one, when they knew he was out the door, they were like, let's just let him finish it with a bow. And if he wants to come back, we can always let him come back, because we were hands off. Right. So, like, that isn't really MCU proper, because it's in space. It's all by itself. Right. But the stuff, like, other than that, like, the stuff that we, like, from pandemic on,
So here's what we have.
Mm-hmm.
So outside of No Way Home, like, because I feel like that kind of operates, much like Deadpool Wolverine, it kind of operates in its own thing. Oh, like, you do have Doctor Strange in there, but, like, it is, like, an outside kind of MCU, which I guess this movie kind of is, too. From the pandemic on, you have Black Widow, Shang-Chi, The Eternals, Spider-Man, Doctor Strange, Multiverse of Madness, Thor: Love and Thunder, Wakanda Forever, Quantumania, Guardians 3, The Marvels, Deadpool Wolverine, Captain America Brave New World, Thunderbolts. Thunderbolts is... I love Deadpool and Wolverine. As a movie, I think Thunderbolts is a better movie. Like, it is a better, like, just top to bottom movie. I have more fun and enjoy Deadpool Wolverine more, but, like, I also understand that, like, that's, it's fucking a giant, not even a slice of cake. It's just a giant piece of cake. So, like, there's a little emotion there, but it doesn't have, like, the character development, like, it, all of the stuff this movie has. Like, that movie's just this hodgepodge of, like, here's a bunch of shit you love. Isn't it great?
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, it is.
Yeah. No, absolutely.
I think the only, I guess, pathos is what I'm talking about. Like, the only movie on that list that touches this is No Way Home.
Yes.
And that's playing off of shit from two other franchises.
Yeah. And it's not... I'm like... It's, well,
Guardians too. But, like, like you talked about, Guardians is its own thing kind of too. So, yeah.
But I also feel like... I don't know. It's hard to say, because it's like... Like, with Spider-Man, I don't feel like I'm okay. So the weakest part of that is I'm going to get so much shit for this. The weakest part of Spider-Man No Way Home is the emotional connection. Because they play too hard into it. Like, and I don't know if it's earned. Like,
but
I don't
that's
know.
That much like Deadpool Wolverine, like, that's kind of what I'm saying is it's not earned in the movie. It was earned through other things.
Yes.
Like, you don't build that in that movie. You only have it because of Toby and Andrew from previous franchises. I don't feel a lot for this MCU Peter and losing MJ and like that severed connection. It doesn't emotionally move me. What emotionally moves me in that movie is the shit with Andrew and Toby.
Yes.
Like, absolutely. That's the stuff that, and like Guardians, like what emotionally moves me in Guardians, it's the Rocket and Peter stuff, but that's built on from previous movies. And yeah, like this does stuff that we haven't seen in MCU in a very long time.
No, absolutely.
I mean, probably since the first Guardians movie, where it's like, oh, like, we didn't know those characters. We do kind of know these characters, but like, even if you came into this movie not knowing these characters, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like they earn every emotion. We don't know shit about the Ghost, man. Not a fucking, like, very little from Ant-Man 2. We haven't seen this character since then. And, like, she shows up and it, like, she doesn't get a lot, but she does get some emotional weight to her where you're just like, I don't want to see something happen to her.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, like they do just enough with like dialogue and like, you know, like back and forths where you're just like, oh yeah, no, absolutely. Like it gives you context in a way that you don't need. And again, this is, I feel like, speaks to how much, like, how good the movie is that you don't need to have seen anything. Like, yeah, it could help a little bit, but it doesn't, you don't need to see anything to really kind of,
I mean, Walker, like, they do a good, like, if you've seen Falcon and Winter Soldier, you already don't like John Walker, but they do a good enough job in this to where you're just like, man, fuck this guy for most of the movie.
Yes. No, absolutely. Like Wyatt Russell is like, it's so freeing to him. Like, you can tell, like, he just, like, he loves this.
Yeah, it feels like he really got to lean into the stuff. He, like, there's some things in Falcon Winter Soldier, like, that he got to lean into the nastiness of, like, what he could be. And here, like, it's he doesn't murder somebody. They do bring it up. But,
yeah.
I mean, well, actually, he does. They kill a lot of people in this movie, man. Like, lot of people that are kind of technically on their side, but, you know, they're fighting for their lives. So, you know, what are you going to do? You know, and they call it out over and over. Like, you suck, man. you're an asshole. But he gets to, he gets to have this moment where, like, he gets to decide, like, am I going to continue to be this bitter dude? Like, he's still him, but he's like, I can be better than this. Like, I don't need to, like, let my biggest mistakes keep defining who I am. And they all kind of get there.
Yeah.
Moment. Yelena gets the heft of it, and maybe, like, rightfully so. It's like we've known how good she is for a while, but like Marvel really lucked out, and she seems to really fucking like, I like Scarlett Johansson's Black Widow just fine. Scarlett Johansson never really seemed to like, she liked hanging out and making the money, it seems like, but she didn't really love the character. Like, I don't feel like you ever got the feeling that, like, she was all in on this. Not to the level of, like, Jennifer Lawrence playing Mystique or the chick from Hunger Games, Katniss, where she's like, I'm so disassociating from all of this. I just, you know, or Stewart in, you know, the vampire movies. Like, it wasn't that level of, like, she's not in this at all. She was still doing her job. Like, there's some really great Black Widow moments towards the end of her stint. None of them are in the Black Widow movie, but whereas Florence Pugh, I mean, she's in this, man. Like, she fucking seems to really embody this. And I would have thought the complete opposite. After, like, her star continued to rise, I would have been like, she's going to be like, I can't keep making your fucking superhero shit, man. I would have thought that this was her exit from the MCU.
Yeah, I think that, like, I felt like that for everybody in this movie, but then I feel like something changed, especially with this movie. Like, it feels like everybody gave a little bit more. Like, to be perfectly honest, I thought that Sebastian Stan was done. Like, honestly, like, I thought that he was done. And, like, between both of them, like, he gets the Lee Marvin Harrison Ford role.
Yeah, and he does such a good job with it in this movie.
Oh my fucking God.
He's had to do so much for so long that and carry, like, a lot of emotional weight, that taking that weight off of him in this movie and letting him just be that guy is,
yeah,
it's weirdly for where, like, everybody else gets these emotional beats and he doesn't get any real emotional beats. Like, the shame room stuff, like, at the end when they all come together inside the void, she looks at him and he's like, yeah, I mean, I've had a great past, so it was wonderful. Like, that's the extent of his emotional fucking beat. You know, yeah. he gets the least emotion. Like, it's a cool rescue, but I mean, it's in the trailer, but he gets the least, like, emotionally charged rescue scene when he saves those people from the truck that's, or the car or whatever that's flipping.
That's
like,
fine.
It's very, like, quick, like, like I said, you've already seen it in the trailer. Like, everybody else, it kind of, you get this, like, kind of music kind of building, and, like, you get this, like, really lean into them playing a hero. And part of it is because we've seen him do this so much, but I like that, like, it would be easy to just be like, we're going to lean on Sebastian Stan and Bucky for all of this. Instead, they lean on a character who, like, up until now, like, she had substantial screen time in Black Widow. Her and the Red Guardian are, like, they are the shining beacons of Black Widow. It's no surprise that they lived on. But,
well, and they're like, as much as Bob is, like, the broken soul of this movie, he Red Guardian and Yelena are, like, the heart of the movie.
Yeah.
Just to go back to Sebastian Stan, what I love about it is that they let him pay off and just be a cool motherfucker. Like, it's like when, like, I love that, like, Red Guardian is, like, the audience proxy for the moments that we see, Bucky Barnes. And he's, like, the biggest fanboy, which is, like, going back to the What If episode, is so great that we get, like, these two people, like, in just a small brief moment of, like, in the car playing the dads, right? Like, are we there yet? No! Yeah. But, like, Sebastian Stan gets to just be, like, it's like, okay, we're gonna let you be the movie star. Like, there's no more Steve, Chris Evans, there's no, like, you know, Anthony Mackie, there's no anything to, like, you be second fiddle. We're going to let you have those moments of, like, there's not, like, you're going to have comedy, but it's going to be more of like the cool guy comedy, right? Like, he's the coolest man in the room in this group. And it's almost like he goes, yeah, this is what I want. This is the personality that I've been cultivating.
And he also gets to bring this like kind of exasperated dad quality to it.
Yes.
Where it's just like, I can't believe this is what I like. It's this thing of like, he kind of like once Steve and him, like he kind of admired Steve and like the lead, but like he always also kind of wanted to be in that position. And it's like, yeah, that thing of like, where now you're in that position and you're like, why did I ever fucking want this job, man? I can't believe I have to deal with all this.
it's the whole thing of like, you can tell he does not want to be a congressman. Like, he's like, yeah, we're going to, it's very worrying. We're going to be looking into the worrying and worrying of it all. My favorite relationship is him and Mel's relationship and how, he's like I love the moment when he takes Congressman Gary aside. He goes, okay, so they can't see us in those cameras. Yeah. We're in a blind spot. It's and like, then Gary's like, what are you talking about?
Stop with the spy shit.
Yeah. But then he like it's like at first it's a joke that he's like DeFontaine's like assistant. Like, there's no way that she would have any moral compass that he gives her. She goes, what is this, your trash? She goes, no, it's my card. And it's so funny that he's like, I believe in you. And she doesn't even believe in herself. And it's the juice. Like, she calling him is the juice that gets him the ability to kind of push all of these losers. Like, I mean, that's literally, like, they could also be called the losers, right? Like, this group of like, you know, like social miscasts. Because it's like even DeFontaine, like, it's like, she's so shocked. Allegra is so shocked when they don't kill each other. She's like, what? They're not dead? Why aren't they dead? And, you know, and it's like, it also goes back to, like, for me, like, and I haven't even talked about Pew, but like, can we just talk for a second? And we'll go back to Pew first, but Lewis Pullman?
So,
like, Jesus Christ, dude.
I mean, I just sent you a funny thing from Julia Louis-Dreyfus's social. Lewis Pullman is fucking just, I don't, he was great in Top Gun, but like, there's so much going on in Top Gun. Yeah. He was like, guys, can we please change the name of this character? I just played a Bob. And they were like, nah, that's his name in the books. We can't change the name.
Yeah. You can't but also like, okay, can we just say, like, I know who was originally cast and he would have made a great version of Century, but I feel like Lewis Pullman was made. I cannot see anybody else.
Me either. So me and Steph talked about this. I was telling her about Steven Yeun was originally cast, had to drop out because they had to push filming. He had other commitments, like, you know, and, you know, of course, the internet tried to turn it into a thing and it just really wasn't a thing.
So much so that he had to come out and say, look,
it's not a thing, guys. I wanted to do this. I fitted for the suit. I thought it was fucking awesome. Like, I couldn't wait. And it, like, it just didn't work out. And, but I don't know that Yoon, I love him. And, like, we just saw him in Mickey 17, and he was a highlight in that movie.
Speaking of, like, guys who played fucking Han Solo to I mean, like, I just rewatched that, just as a side note, and I was like, how did I not get that he's literally playing Han Solo, but, like, the worst version of
the Han Solo. The worst version. Like, if Han Solo doesn't break good, it's just...
Yeah, exactly. It's
Steven Yeun.
I mean, like, let's be honest, Han Solo is a drug dealer. Like, he's literally a fucking drug dealer. He's running that just, drugs, like you said. Yeah, it happened to be break good. Like, it's just Mickey 17, he just...
for a girl. He broke good for a girl. Yeah. did it all for the
lady. For an underage girl. Yeah, for an underage girl.
But I love Stephen Yeun. I don't think he can bring the, like, I watched him in The Walking Dead. I don't know that he has the vulnerability to do what Lewis Pullman did. Like, second Bob, so if you don't know, like, unfortunately, comic readers knew. Like, you knew.
Yeah.
You knew what was going to happen. Like, the Winter Soldier. Like, you just knew.
Well, we hinted at it for a long, we hinted about it, like, not even Century. It wasn't even Century. It was Void. Like, we hinted at that for a long time. Like, since we saw the trailer, we were like, oh, yeah, this is going to totally, I think that what's surprising everybody is the third act and how they approach the third act, right?
That surprised me, and I knew what the fuck was going to happen.
Yeah.
He's going to become the Void and just start turn the city into darkness.
Darkness, yeah. But also, there's just so much to like about this film and how the right decisions are made, right? But I feel a lot of that goes back to Pullman as Bob and then Century and then Void and how so weirdly similar but dissimilar that all three personalities are, right?
And it does a lot, like a lot of, so I think this movie does, I think it's upper Marvel. I don't think it's upper echelon. I don't think it's like top five. I think it's up there. But what this movie does better, or maybe more so than almost any other Marvel movie, mm-hmm. is tackle like really, really, we've seen it in the TV shows, but really, really heavy subjects like depression, and suicide and anxiety and
drug addiction, abuse.
Trauma.
Yeah.
It does it in a very quick manner, but like it doesn't necessarily gloss over those things. And not just for the one character. Like, you really only get a lot of Bob and Yelena when it comes to, like, that emotional stuff. But, like, you don't have time to get into everybody's, like, this generational trauma thing. But there's enough there that, and it's not preachy about it, but it does have this thing of, like, you are responsible for what you do, but you're not necessarily responsible for what happened to you. Like, it's your job to like figure out how to move forward from that. And in Bob's case, like, not to jump to them, but in Bob's case, it's like, well, I hang out with these superpowered people. I live in their, guest room, but I can't be the super person, because then the other person comes out too. Like, that's fine, but like, you know, and it's so weird that like the resolution is kind of like, well, we have to hug this guy. Like, it's a whole thing of like, he needs a hug, and that sounds reductive and goofy and stupid, but that kind of is what the movie is. Is like, well, this guy, like, he becomes the ultimate evil because of the wrong person believing in him. But, like, it's also, like, these shitty, abusive people that shaped him, like, into this lost soul. Like, there's a lot of heavy, heavy subjects there that they do a good job of tackling, but not getting so deep that it bogs down, like, what is just a superhero story. I can think of like a handful of Marvel movies that do stuff like that. Guardians 3 is one of them.
WandaVision.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. In the TV shows, we've seen it. We saw it in WandaVision. I don't know. Like I said, maybe a few Marvel movies have been able to do stuff like this. I think Civil War does some of it with like the Bucky Cap Iron Man stuff.
Winter Soldier does it with friendship. At the end. Yeah. I feel like Guardians does it. Like all three Guardians movies do it in some way or another, right?
I think so. I think two gets shit on for. I think it's a better movie than most people give it credit for.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah, definitely. And especially with like familial trauma. Yeah. And how people relate to one, like family dynamics. Oh yeah, that one is. I feel like that one more like just as much as part three are like it very much so leans into what like Thunderbolts does, but in a very different way. But I feel like the closest thing that it is WandaVision, because it deals with trauma. Like both of them deal with trauma, but in a very different trauma. Like WandaVision is about losing the love of your life, right? And how we deal with that and how we come to terms with that. Like in a lot of the best episodes of that. And then the third act kind of like it's weird because it's like the third act loses it because it becomes this whole thing of like a light show. Whereas like this one, it builds up to it. And then the third act is
it's the same but it's different, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like WandaVision loses me at the end because it becomes this big fight scene. But this movie, it actually takes a pause in the fight scene. Or not even a pause. Like, the resolution is inside and, like, oh.
Inside of it, yeah.
What you need is a hug and understanding and, like, hey, man, we're going to get through this together. Like, you're better than the worst things that ever happened to you. You do not have to sit in the dark. Like, just all of that stuff. And back to our point about Steven Yeun would have been great, man. But Pullman, there's something to it.
There's a fragility to him.
Yeah.
There's like, and this is like, I know this sounds weird, but go with me on this. He is the amplified version of his dad in the best way possible. Like his dad, like my favorite movie from his dad, like Bill Pullman, is Zero Effect. And
it's a movie that's tough to find now.
Yeah, it is. But Zero Effect is literally a guy about the world's greatest detective who also happens to be the most mentally unhinged like detective in the world. He's like Sherlock Holmes times 100 because he's a meth head. That's ultimately what that movie is about this character. But like Lewis Pullman is like the best parts of his dad, but also has like not the worst parts, but like the parts that Bill Pullman was only able to kind of hint at. Like Lewis Pullman somehow manages to be as like the frailest part of his dad, but also like the most, like when he comes down as Century, like that's the thing that I love is that when he walks out as Century, you're like, holy fuck, who is this dude? This is a fucking, like this is the first like weird traditional superhero that we have seen in the MCU. It took 36 films, but we finally got a cape fucking superhero, right? In Century. Yeah. But he also plays it to the hilt, but also he plays the cracks in it so much so that when he turns into Void, like it makes 100% sense and it's all physical. It's physical and it's in the voice. I don't know, man. Like it's a wild performance because we only see him for small chunks of the movie. I think maybe he's 15 minutes of a 2-hour and 10-minute movie.
Yeah.
But he occupies so much of this movie. Like as much as Florence Pugh's Yelena occupies. Like, but it's never done. It's not like this. It's not like a, it's not a physical thing. It's almost like a metaphysical thematic thing that kind of like overwhelms the movie in the best way possible, because like all three of those people that he is, that Lewis Pullman plays, are three distinct characters, but there's a through line so that by the end you realize like the most beautiful part about this end is that the end credit sequence is like Sinners, absolutely a part of the movie. Like seeing Bob where he is and him just doing the dishes and them being okay with it. Like them kind of jokingly nodding at him, but also being like,
the
only person
that doesn't is the biggest asshole. He's like, well, Bob could help us out. And he's like, well, you know, I can't, but I did the dishes. Yeah.
I did the dishes. But I mean, it's such a beautiful thing. Like that these guys, like here's my thing is like, you, it made me laugh so much harder the second time, because I was like, the new Avengers would totally fucking let Bob be who he is because they love Bob. The old Avengers would never, ever, ever do this. They would put him in a fucking cage somewhere deep, 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 deep down into the bottomless pit. Yeah. And like, it instantly made me
feel
go,
like Cap is the one that
yes. would
try to be like, because he did Bucky. But everybody else would be like, no, we have to find this dude. We got to bury this dude.
Yeah, absolutely. Even though they have a Hulk, it doesn't matter. Because
but they had to figure out a way to kind of control the Hulk. Like, that's part of what the second movie's about. Is like, it only works if we can control him.
Exactly. And,
like, the problems that kind of leads to, you know? That's Tony's whole thing. Like, he wants, like, to control everything, you know? And what he can't control, like, has to be buried or destroyed. And, like, I guess maybe because it's, like, weirdly enough, it becomes, like, a version of the OG comic book Thunderbolts thing, where it's like, these were villains who kind of get a second lease at like being something better than what they were, you know, like, it's even though Walker isn't necessarily a villain, like he is, you know,
but also he's like the one that's defending. He's like, so that's what you want. Century, like, you know, Red Guardian on top of Century. Like, you think that that's a thing. And then, of course, Alexia's like, yes, exactly.
You're bringing up Alexi. So, one of the other, like, we've talked about the action and the pathos, a little bit about the action, but the action scenes are very, very good. They're also really low-key, like, outside of the, like, stuff towards the end. Like, it's very traditional style action, and it doesn't move at like this breakneck pace. Like, it's very methodical, which was kind of refreshing. Like,
yeah, it's very 80s. Like, this whole movie is very kind of like if Cannon decided to make a superhero movie, this would be it, right? Like this is what it would be.
Like going back to like Winter Soldier and Civil War. Like, or Winter Soldier specifically, like, the action there is very, like, it's very quick. Like, it moves at such a pace. But, like, Yelena doesn't move quickly. She moves intentionally.
Exactly. And she's also not she is not a super soldier, right? She's not even Black Widow. Like, she is who she is, right? Like, and what I love is that, like, they made it clear that she was good, but I feel like also because of the fact that she's going through some shit, like she said, like she literally, like her moment between her and Alexi, I feel like feels like a generation speaking about themselves. Like, she's speaking about her generation. I come home, I scroll on my phone, I go to bed, I wake up, I go to work, I come home, I drink. and there's nothing left for me. Like, literally when she says that, I was
and
like,
and where were you? Like, I've, like, been, yeah. like, you checked out of my life, you know? Like, yep. and Alexi does have this kind of, like, well, he doesn't say it, but, like, early on it does feel like he feels like she abandoned him a little bit. And yeah. she's like, you just, you never got in touch with me. You know, like, it's, I mean, we talked about this forever ago when we talked about Axel F., the Beverly Hills Cop Netflix movie.
Yeah.
But the line is stuck with me when his daughter's like, you're always the parent. You're like, did I not contact you? Yes. But you are my parent. Mm-hmm. And you checked out of my life.
It's very, like, it's so great. But going back to her, I feel like I watched, okay, so, like, the thing I took away from, like, I rewatched Black Widow. I didn't rewatch Black Widow when I was watching, when I saw it for the first time. But the second time, like, you know, just to kind of reintroduce, like, myself to the character and where people very interesting because she's exactly what you say that she wasn't. She doesn't move with intention. She moves like super quick, like her sister, right?
Yeah.
But also, like, there's a lot that's happened between Black Widow and this movie.
Yeah.
Her mom disappeared. We don't know where her mom is. Well, yeah. I mean, we know contract disputes, but we don't like her. Her sister has died a second time for her. So it's like she's in a bit of depression. So it makes sense.
She got, like, we saw it in Hawkeye. Like, they don't really talk about it here. But
yeah.
she got fucking snapped away and came back. Like, she's one of the few characters that, like, they've kind of delved into, like, what that was from, like, from that point of view. Like, we haven't gotten a lot of that. Like, some heroes got snapped away and came back, but, like, they didn't, like, when they come back, they just save the world, you know? And we didn't really get a lot of, like, what the fuck that felt like to show back up and be like, everybody's moved on.
And so, like, her being a first step, I feel like makes absolute sense because... So, like, my favorite character that I didn't realize until the second is the lady in her tracksuit in her opening action scene.
Yeah.
She's not wearing, not like, and, like, thank God, you know that Flo, like, I read something that said, a warm hug from Florence Pugh could solve my depression. And I'm fairly certain that that's probably what half of America needs, is a warm hug from Florence Pugh. But what I was going to say is no person, like, she's very intentionally making a character that feels like they're off their game. Because in that opening she jumps off a skyscraper in a velour tracksuit.
So and you were talking about how, like, she's like speaking for a generation, and like, as somebody who works in an office, like, I don't show up like dressed to the nines, but I mean, I show up in pants and like sometimes a hoodie. It just depends on what I feel like, but, you know, a shirt, and, you know, I look somewhat decent most.
Yeah,
but I'm not going after these people, but, like, I do work with people who literally show up to work and it's like, you slept in that, right? Like, that looks like what you sleep in. Like, you're wearing pajamas, or, like, it's the bare minimum to get dressed, and, like, the absolute bare minimum. Like, it's, and I, again, not knocking those people, like, it's a generational thing where it's just like, I'm so fucking tired. Like, I can't put any thought into this. I'm wearing these fucking yoga pants and this top that's probably a little too big or maybe a little too small or whatever, or and this is how the fuck I'm showing up to work, because I'm over everything. Like, nothing matters, you know? And Yeah, like it is, there's something there without them having to like really get into what it is. They don't they don't have to explain everything. It's just like, oh yeah, like there's bits and pieces you see. She's not given up on life, but she has kind of just given up on trying to make sense of it all. And like it is Alexei who's like, well, maybe stop doing stuff in the shadows, and like, you know, be a hero like your sister, something like that. But I didn't get back my point about Alexei and like the other thing this movie does.
Yeah.
I sidetracked myself. The humor. Marvel.
Yeah. Oh God.
Early Marvel. That's really kind of like outside of maybe the Incredible Hulk, like what they excelled at is this, the character beats, a little bit of action, humor. Like we've lost that somewhere. I mean, there's bits and pieces like Guardians, like we talked about, No Way Home has some of that. But those other movies in the last 5 years, like have kind of like they lost the ability to infuse that. Like the humor's felt really kind of goofy and forced.
Mm-hmm.
And it is goofy here. Like Alexei is a lot of the driving force of the humor. But there's also like little other moments from other characters like Walker or like Bucky with his like constant exasperation of like, and I will say the one scene that's in the trailer that's not in this movie, unless I was just not paying attention, is the when Alexei's like the Thunderbolts and he's like, we can't call ourselves that.
Ourselves that, like, yeah.
Thank you. Like that's not in the movie. It's in the trailer, but it's not in the movie. Or at least I don't think it was, right?
I don't think so either. No, it's not. It's
not. So which it's a great scene in the trailer. But yet, like, it's the just all the none of it's it is bad. Like some of it's intentionally dad joke level bad. Like a lot of the Alexei stuff is just like so fucking goofy. Like it goes down to the wire. Like at the end when he's like, "I've got it, guys.
I've got it, guys.
The Avengers with a Z."
Fact that it's literally a stamp, not even like integrated.
Yeah. He just took like a cloth patch and like put it over the S.
Oh my God, it's so funny, so fucking hilarious. But it's like in the best way possible because it's so bad. It's funny, like it's dad humor. Like it feels like like the bottom of a baby seal. And but
it's like a multi-generation, because like there's also like the sarcastic, like Yelena has a very like, oh, I grew up watching The Office kind of humor thing to her, you know, where it's like dry. And but then like Walker has like this mean streak kind of humor to him that was like late 80s, early 90s kind of stuff.
Like late Gen Xer.
Yeah.
Like, you know, he's 40, and you know, he's 40 because that's the kind of bullying humor that a 40-year-old has.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Like, it's like, and then when somebody gets mad about it, you're like, oh, I'm just playing, dude. Like we just give each other shit. That's what we do.
Yeah. It's like it's Vince Vaughn. It's very Vince Vaughn.
Yeah.
It's very kind of like, oh, you don't like me calling you Bobby. I'm going to call you Bobby.
Yeah.
And like that's exactly what it is. And like, and then you've got Ghost, who's very much so just a little bit younger than, like, she's older millennial, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, she's the one that just looks at Yelena and goes, bitch. Like, you know, like, she's the one that over-explains everything with her humor. She's like, oh, I'm sorry. My suit was made in a lab to keep me from disintegrating into nothingness.
Yeah.
Like everybody has their distinct voice, and it's so kind of like the joy of the movie is not in the action scenes, but it's to watch them play. Like there's
a moment. That's what the joy, like the early stuff. Like, the action scenes are great, but like when you go back to the early Avengers movies and Civil War, and like, it's the character moments that help you kind of get through anything that might be lacking. Like, if you were to just watch the action pieces in this movie, you might just be like, what? Like, they're not that great.
No,
like, they're okay, but there's no giant, like, in-game level, like, holy shit, this is massive kind of thing going on here. But you get, like the first Avengers movie, you get these small little character moments, like, in those action set pieces that really sell all of that. And
no, absolutely. Absolutely.
Like, it's just not something we've had in a Marvel movie, like we've said, in a very, very long time. And I mean, maybe part of it is, like, here's some characters that we don't necessarily give a shit about.
And I feel like that is the power of the movie. Like, it's the fact that you gave us, this is an island of misfit toys. And give me that. Like, it's very much so what you want Suicide Squad to be.
Yeah.
And it almost is in James Gunn's hands. But this is a movie where, so, like, the biggest compliment I can give to it is that I'd rather watch a 3-hour version of this movie with these characters bickering in the Avengers Tower than any of the other characters. Like, I don't want action. Like the action was, like you said, acceptable, right? But what makes the action good is all of the stuff in between is so well written, so well acted, that you're almost like the action is a disruption between your time with the characters. And I haven't had that in a movie since Age of Ultron. Like, Age of Ultron was a movie where I was like, man, I really don't want to see that. Like, I wanted a 45-minute party scene. I didn't want the 10-minute version of the party scene. Right?
Yeah.
Like, and when they leave it and Ultron gets created, I'm kind of like, what? And then the whole entire movie becomes about Ultron and them fighting. And I'm like, nah, man, I just want a hangout movie. I want real Bravo. And this movie gave me real Bravo.
Yeah, it has that kind of feel to it.
Whereas, like, and then in, like, the best part of Endgame is that I get that for the long, I get an hour of characters hanging out, even though it's kind of sad and you get Tony yelling. And I feel like the more I watch those movies, the more I'm like, man, Tony, you're a killjoy, man. Like, since Endgame, since Ultron, Tony becomes such a sourpuss.
I think it was always there. Like, I'm not anti Iron Man, but I am like, yeah, Tony was always not great.
And you know what? That's what's gonna make him so good as Doom.
Yeah. Like, did you see the photos?
No.
Not of Doom, but just of them. So I guess they're filming.
The Avengers scene.
Yeah. Hanging out watching Thunderbolts. Like, that's fucking cool, man.
Yes. Almost as cool as Julia Louise Dreyfus calling the Rizzler a child.
No offense to that. I sent Adam a picture from Julia Louis Dreyfus, met the Rizzler, you know, social media sensation. And she's like, no offense to that lovely child, but I had no idea who he was. That just cracked me up.
So good. So good.
We haven't really talked about her.
No.
What a piece of shit she is.
Oh, yes, but so good. Like, so, like, this is, like, for me, like, so you casted, you literally casted perfect. Like, you knew that Julia Louis-Dreyfus, like, Valentina is literally what would have happened after Seinfeld. like, it's an extension. Like, I know it sounds weird, but I don't think it sounds weird because it's an extension of Seinfeld. Like, if everybody died at the end and she got involved with a corporation and then she just climbed the ladder, that's exactly who Valentina is. Like, it's like, it's so, I don't even know, like, it's so great. Like, she literally is the female Tony Stark, like, without an Iron Man suit, right? Or am I wrong?
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right. Like, she's opportunistic, and Tony is nothing if not opportunistic. You know, it's the, like, much like Tony, like, doing the wrong thing for the right kind of reasons.
Like, exactly.
She does have this, the Avengers, she's right. The Avengers aren't coming. They don't really exist anymore. And now we have two teams of Avengers, which is going to be really interesting.
Actually, it could be three teams of Avengers, right? Because because you have fucking, like, why is it, like, Why are you making like Cap Falcon a dick? Like, I mean,
I like it that there's kind of two sides to it where it's like,
yes,
he's like, yeah, y'all are like, because like going back to the Captain America movie, his whole thing was like, I don't want to be beholden to the government, but the Avengers do need to exist, I think. And when now you have this team of Avengers that's like, definitely beholden to the government, A, because most of them are criminals.
Yeah.
Like, one of them is an elected official. Like, and it's like, of course they see him as kind of dickish, but also they're led by friends, like, who are now on kind of opposite sides of this. So, like, what's that dynamic gonna be? Like, we're gonna go back to like OG Cap or Falcon and Bucky, now Cap and Bucky, where like, remember in is it Civil War, where he's like, well, can you like let the seat up? Like, yeah. He's like, no. Like, no, you ride in the back. Like, that level of like animosity that kind of became this like brotherhood, and now is gonna like kind of fall back into like, we're on opposite sides of this, but we also do love each other more or less. I think that's going to be a really interesting dynamic that, again, we haven't had in the MCU in a while.
No, like the, like, not everybody gets along, and it's kind of tenuous. Like, it's kind of great. Like,
I mean, the whole fucking, I hate to keep going back to the first Avengers movie, but it's what this movie reminds me most of. They didn't get along with each other. They all had different opinions on how they should do things. And it takes this one, like, it takes Fury and like the death of a character to unite them. But like, in a weird way, Dreyfus is Fury, but like, and this is ultimately like the sadness of, Secret War, or what was the fucking TV show?
WandaVision?
No, the Skrull stuff.
Secret Wars. Secret Wars.
Okay, yeah. No, Secret Wars, the movie. What's the?
Oh yeah, it's the Avengers. Good Lord, I thought Secret Invasion.
Secret Invasion. Damn it, like. It's Secret something.
Yeah. There's so many damn secrets in in MCU, like, or like in Marvel Comics. But anyway,
Secret, it's the secret invasion of it all is like, that show is not gonna have any lasting impact, but like, we had bits of like her and Fury and like all of that stuff in there that are now lost because the show sucked and like, it can't really impact anything else going forward. Mm-mm. But like, she gets to kind of be Nick Fury here. But like the other version of Nick, where he's not completely like altruistic. I mean, he wasn't any, he was kind of a prick anyway and doing things secretively. But she's, I mean, I don't know, maybe in a weird way, it's kind of pointing out the sexism of it all, where it's like, well, when Nick Fury does this, everybody's just like, yeah, Nick Fury. But when I do it, it's like, that bitch, you know?
No, absolutely. And, but also, like, to be honest, I feel like she's, at the end of the day, she's smarter than Fury. Because Fury, like...
Fury wants to operate in secret, and she knows... Yeah. You have to walk the line of like, yes, these are the things that need to be done in secret, but you have to have this public facing thing where Fury only wanted to operate in secret. Like, yeah. He did not. Coulson was the public facing thing, but even he wasn't public facing. He was just the like the handout to the like the liaison, you know, the mm-hmm. assistant to the regional manager, not the assistant regional manager. but yeah, it's, I don't know. It's a lot of like weird moving pieces that they nail either accidentally or just they all understood the assignment. And It is weird that, like, we definitely had movies about characters that we didn't really know in the last 5 years that pretty much all fell on their face and weren't the success that they should have been. But this isn't that. And, like, I don't know. Is it because they stopped meddling with it so much? Like, other than, like, the delays in filming and maybe some of the reshoots because of circumstances outside of their control. Like, why does this feel so hands-off?
I think because, to me, it's very simple. It's because it's not trying to shoehorn in story elements to get us to another Avengers movie. Because at the end of the day, this is an Avengers movie. Even though, and that's what that's what the asterisk is, right? They're Thunderbolts, but they're the new Avengers. And this is like an undercover, like the forming of the new Avengers rather than, but also there's no stakes other than what are the stakes in the movie. It's not like, yeah, there's the post-credits scene that was filmed by the, like, and this is the thing. This is the weirdest part about this is that, yeah, the post-credit scene is connected and it feels connected, but literally this post-credit scene was directed by the Russos,
which is so weird. Which is interesting. So let's talk about the post-credit scene real quick.
Yes. And
we can kind of wrap up there. So do you think, I guess maybe possible spoilers for Fantastic Four? I don't know. Do you think this ruins the end of Fantastic Four? Not ruins it. Ruins the wrong word. Spoils it.
No, because we...
It's definitely kind of the right word.
I don't think so because we don't know who's in that rocket.
This is true. You think Doom is in that rocket?
I think Doom is in the rocket.
Holy shit. This is,
yeah, that's why I don't think... you don't do this unless you have a brazen plan for this. And I feel like
I don't think I'd even thought of that. Like I that didn't even really, I was like, oh shit, the Fantastic Four is not going to be able to save the Earth. And somehow they Superman this shit and launch themselves into another dimension. But your thought is that's not the case.
Yeah. That I feel like it's, they send Doom or Silver Surfer.
Doom sends himself. Doom is just like, I found a way to. So that very well would mean that we're getting at least some of Doom.
Well, they've said they've all but confirmed that Doom is in Fantastic Four.
Probably not major role, but definitely part of it. Okay.
Yeah. And they've also said that, like, you know, like that was part of the prep work that Downey did for Doom. But also it makes sense because if Doom is Tony Stark And so, like, we've never said that. Okay, so, like, here's my theory. So, first off, everybody is assuming that he's playing Victor Von Doom.
Yeah, I don't think that's been confirmed.
Yeah, so. But here's the thing. What if he's playing Tony Stark? It's just he's Dr. Doom
instead of Iron Man.
Instead of Iron Man.
Tony Stark breaks bad.
Exactly. Because
Tony Stark gets taken by the Ten Rings or whatever, and instead of becoming like who he becomes, he breaks bad, becomes one of them, becomes this like global terrorist.
Exactly. And he becomes Dr. Doom because he's Doomsday, basically.
Yeah.
And he gets sent off, like it makes sense to me because, okay, so like Doomsday becomes, he gets sent off in the rocket, right? The rocket lands, it opens up, holy shit, it's Tony Stark, are you fucking kidding me? And he goes along with it because in his world, he's a bastard. But in this world, oh my
he's
God.
He's a hero.
He's a hero. And he has access to everything because he is Tony Stark. So he has access to everything that Stark Labs, everything
and
that probably...
Now he becomes like he's going to take over this world. And that becomes... Oh, okay. I mean, we might be spoiling Doomsday for ourselves and anybody listening. Because this sounds like the perfect pitch for... that plot. That's why it's Avengers Doomsday, and they have to like take on this guy, but then somehow he does something to cause this event that triggers a multiversal collapse.
Exactly. And that's how you get everybody. But then you also get Cap in there, and he brings his own Cap, which he knows is Captain Hydra. But he's just like he forms the rift because we already know that we pretty much know that it's probably what gets him sent there. But he also if Tony Stark is who he is, but it's just 1960s Tony Stark, right? It becomes this whole thing of like he can bring other people over that he needs, and he brings over the people, and that's how we get that whole shift of. Certain people get to come and play in this universe again, right? But also, it leads to other things too, as well as like, you know, maybe the Rift isn't controlled. And so that's how we get the X-Men in here. This is how we get certain people from other places in Doomsday, like in Doomsday, but also how we keep the Thunderbolts, how we keep a new Avengers, how we keep the Avengers. And it becomes this whole thing of like, because like I said, like, I don't think that it's ever like nobody, he's playing Doom, and it's never been said that like it's Victor Von Doom. It's just, he's playing Dr. Doom. And like I said, like that, I feel like that to me is like one of those things where it's like, that would be some wild ass shit. That would be some real wild shit. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but. Yeah, I definitely don't know if the Fantastic Four are in that rocket, because you don't show it, right? Like you don't show, like you see the Fantastic Four rocket, but you don't. But it's not the same rocket that's in the movie that plays all, like, because we saw the trailer, right? We've seen the trailer multiple times, and that rocket that they're shooting off is not the same rocket. And even the other one that comes back and it looks like the world is collapsed, the Earth is collapsing on itself, it doesn't look like the same rocket. This one is like not as round. This one is more sharp. The other one is not as rounded. I don't know. That's my theory. But we're not going to know for another, 12 months? So,
I mean,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, I guess maybe. I feel like we'll get more of a hint at the end of Fantastic Four for sure.
Yeah.
Who might be in the rocket.
Exactly. So. Like, and what happens at the end of Fantastic Four, which I feel like they really have built it up and guaranteed that movie's going to be something like, I think that's going to be something that everybody's going to want to watch, regardless if they're a Fantastic Four fan or not.
So until this weekend, I'd only seen that newest trailer. on my phone, and I thought it was fine on my phone.
Yeah.
Then on the big screen, it's real different, man. It's really good. It's a really good trailer. And yeah, like I'm more stoked now for Fantastic Four. I'm more stoked now for whatever Marvel's gonna keep doing. Like Cap wasn't a great start to 2025 for them, but it did make more money than Thunderbolts will in its first week. But it's also Captain America. It's a bigger, much bigger brand than like, oh, here's a bunch of characters you don't really know and Bucky. So yeah. I think Thunderbolts might have a little bit more legs. There's not a big opening next week, right? So it's got a second weekend. So I wouldn't be surprised to see it and Sinners kind of neck and neck next week for top spot. And yeah, I mean, we'll see. I don't think it's going to be blockbuster, but I mean, who knows? It could have really, really decent legs on it and wind up being one of, you know, I think it probably should be in the top 10 for the summer.
Yeah, I think it is going to have legs. I definitely
word of mouth has been really fucking good. Like, there's not a lot of bad press coming out about any of this. So, I want to see it again. I want to go. It's playing in the true IMAX here. But it's only playing for a couple of weeks. Maybe we get a chance to go see it. I don't know. We'll see. So.
Okay. Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I feel like it's like more than box office, it's a story upturn for Marvel, who have been just, it's been rough for 5 years, like the pandemic. Like, it feels like they're finally out of the pandemic doldrums. And maybe we're going to see an uptick, not just here, but like in the MCU writ large. Yeah. Hopefully that is the case. And hopefully that's the reason why, like, a lot of the TV shows have just stopped developing and stopped filming. And maybe they're just kind of taking an e-break to it and just trying to readjust.
Yeah.
That's what my hope is.
I mean, this was the first real true step in the right direction, because it's MCU proper. There's no like stipulations of like, well, that's James Gunn doing his thing. Oh, that's a Spider-Man movie. And those kind of like operate on a different level. Like, it is like full on MCU proper kind of, not necessarily niche. Cause it by the end, it is this is an Avengers movie, like much like Civil War, you know, it's like, oh, it's an Avengers movie. So yeah, like, I mean, fucking bravo. I don't think it's like 100% perfect. Like I said, I do think there's some little nitpicks here and there, but like just knowing that they could make this kind of shit still is really just like this sigh of like, oh, thank God. Like, you can absolutely still do it.
No, 100%.
All right. So with nothing new coming out really next week, I think we're going to do a heavy, heavy Star Wars episode Thursday. I've got three episodes of Andor to catch up on, and then there's three more coming this week.
Yep.
We'll see if we can both get to the last three before we record. Maybe not.
I'm gonna try, and then of course today they dropped like what I'm really looking forward to is Star Wars Underworld.
So we have Underworld and Tales from the Underworld and Andor to talk about. And that's the plan for next week. Unless something, you know, major happens and we get something else to talk about. But yeah, just a big Star Wars coverage for next episode. Until then, go check out everything else we're doing over at xwingfiles.com, or you can read our written work over at Adam's website.
Yes, themovieall.com, where I've got a bunch of 4K content, 4K reviews. And I've got a movie heavy week this week. I've got a couple of movies that I'm going to be reviewing. So check that out. And we will be back next week talking Star Wars, which I'm actually really excited about.
Me too.
Because
we have not texted at all about Andor. So it's going to be a fun discussion. So
Absolutely.
So, we will see you guys then. Number 4, Mario. Number 5, Weird Al. Number 6, Batman. Number 7, Kal-El. Number 8, The Simpsons. Number 9, TV. Number 10, every single band that I stole all their MP3s back before they all sold out. See it all together if you're with me now.